We discussed the lecture this morning. So we start with questions, remarks, ideas.
Simple question, maybe to start with. If you have the Cartesian coordinate system, that would be category B, right? Where would you put the, like a tutorial, or what you call it, like using processing? This plane that somehow wraps around itself, so it's like in a torus system.
Yeah, this is a non Euclidean geometry.
But is it in the B category?
This is advanced B. This is always the problem with these kind of simple categorization. Mm-hmm. So this is the non-Euclidean geometry. Just this shows very clearly that for it's advanced B, it shows very clearly that geometry is not in the focus of B, but it's algorithms and so on. And this kind of morphing of geometry, morphing of the intuition people trusted in the beginning of B, because that you transfer from A to B, and then the analytical geometry was just to bring that this was all with the algorithms of Newton, bring this kind of potentiality, bring it to a line, and then we, if you have two dimensions, we can draw it on a plane. So the trusted in these kind of algorithms just by binding it back to the conventional geometric patterns. So they have been able to do more things with the algorithm, because the algorithm is a central thing. It's not any longer the geometry. And they call it analytical geometry, which means algorithms first and then a kind of intuition out of that. And in the beginning, they made just an imitation of the Euclidean geometry, because in A, they trusted in geometry, and to be able to trust in algorithms, they tried to make intuition out of it in an old-fashioned way. So, and during 100 to 200 years, the algorithms just made what they want. And then, they really get frightened, met the non-Euclidean built geometry, which is something just to get that, the last chance to get all these kind of algorithms, arithmetics. And this is the end of this is a phenomena of the end of B. And this is a transfer to C. And in C, it's not any longer important that there's some intuition at all. And in architecture, we are currently realizing that we are leaving the Euclidean geometry. This is what with all the non-Euclidean, with the CAD system and so on, this is working. So we are just realizing that we are leaving non-Euclidean geometry, but what's behind that and what is the driving force of our computers, so that this is a form of secularization, so that everybody is able to do that so easily with processing and Revit and grasshoppers and so on. This is a kind of secularization. So we already train in doing that. And by being in populations that they're doing that, then we get stability to get the thinking what C might be, and with and then we are able to trust in things which are not any longer in geometrical intuition, just organizing some symbols, and we trust in that there will be some geometric result at the end, but it's of no major importance any longer. This is what programming code is doing. It's a simple manipulation. And you can make, out of that, you can make some geometry and so on. All these kind of renderings we are doing and layout systems and so on, we are on a non-geometrical, symbolical, we're doing all the sliders and the geometry is organizing somehow. It's not this important. We have some more abstract parameters, for example, the visibility, the connectivity, energy, the efficiency of energy, and so on, and they just organize the geometry thing. So somehow, and it's a little complicated if you have all these clear categories and it's a little too strict to put it in there. Yeah.
Well, what about artificial intelligence? Artificial intelligence or topology? I tried to study artificial intelligence before, but it was extremely logical, actually, and it was not intelligence, but I don't know how they are doing it now.
It's very similar, and what Klaus yesterday told was the artificial intelligence stuff, the architectonics on the level C. This is my background as well. The geometry thing is on virtual reality. So they explored all these kind of things. This is avant-garde in the geometry stuff. It had been in the 18th, 19th, last century. So you are informed in the geometry, research in geometry and the forms and the outcome. And in artificial intelligence, you are in research in the topologies. So and with the logics and so on. And all this, for example, what was Chomsky in trying to transfer one language into the other and so on. It's a geometrical representation of topology. So it tries to get all the trees of dependencies and is operating in very logical ways with arithmetics across these topological trees, and it's a very geometrical thinking, a representative thinking on the relations between objects. While the geometry is more on the formal things and doing on the calculating on the relations of formal points and how they get some formal representations in colors and geometry. The artificial intelligence using the same algorithms, but having the idea of somehow hierarchical or networked connected elements, for example, in language, an apple and fruits. Apple is a subclass of fruit and so on. And then with probabilistic methods, with M algorithms, just recombine all these things. But the idea is that you're able to make graphs and give geometrical representations of graphs of connections between concepts. And therefore it's very similar to the graphical things, the same kind of thinking, but of some immaterial conceptual relations, but it's thought in a geometrical way as well. And therefore, it's B. And the transfer in artificial intelligence to C, this is what Klaus yesterday showed us. This is from the thought from the abundance to the concrete point without a specificity in what a relation is, what the concept is, and so on. So it's just getting it out of the of this kind of intuition.
It was still hard to imagine those things in the C level.
Yeah. Of course, this is the really challenging thing, and so. Big problem for us as well is that 98% of what you're reading, even in scientific papers, it's B, pure B. There's nearly nothing which is C around. And the interesting thing is that we are flooded with computers and all this kind of technology, and nobody really realizes that they are, as people do not realize with the electrical current, that it's mystical. Nobody realizes that it's not intuition with electricity. The same with symbol manipulation. They really want to get it to the graphical intuition, but it's not like that. So, and the problem is, if you read 89% at minimum of scientific papers is in B. It's crazy. So and. And therefore we are so anxious with, for example, with the climate debate, with the political debate, with terrorism and so on, with all these upcoming things, or information flood, and all these, everywhere people are so anxious because of this difference, and this gap between what is around there, ubiquitously, everywhere, and the effects which can't be explained in the old-fashioned way. So people always are not able to cope with the effects you're always that we're doing, and therefore they we're currently running these kind of problems. Therefore, we really think it's important to understand what it is, and it's not a question of technology. It's just the way we think about the phenomena, which we already produced. But we are doing these things, and people don't like to think in the appropriate way about that. Nearly everybody is not willing to understand and see at the world as we get the producing all the. For example, this for example is a printed foil, and this is an every paper, not an any paper. So this is a paper, and it's printed like a paper. It's just therefore it's so cheap, but it's every any paper. So it's the meaning of that is not any longer what is printed physically there, and it takes paper. It's what we want to have there. And we just are able to write anything.
But what's the difference then between any and every? Because
every is the
third
the
level.
Yeah. And any is the we have to.
Any that could be
every
anything.
Every is you have your secure elements and you trust in, and you have secure transformations. You trust in the logic, for example, or the functions. And then you explore the space, and this is every. So you have an anchor, and then you have operations, and you just explore what's going on. This is every.
But would that be the screen, as I see it? No.
The screen is any. You can have any. So you can.
But it cannot be a banana. It's a screen.
You can have any kind of
representation, but
so you can have, you are able to define, not follow, for example, not follow the line of the, for example, if you have the letter of the printing machine, the first. So you have all the letters. You have the 21 letters, and then you are able to combine them and so on. So you have the elements. And there's the rules how to combine the elements for a text. And the rules to check whether it's right or not, it's the rules of the language, the rules of the logic, and
so it's the rules
you bring in so on. And you do get not the idea, or very rare, it's not the constituent. Of course it can have any other letter, just so. But this is an environment and a game with the letters, which are very specific, and the rules, the line, and so on. This is a game of doing that, which is extremely fixed to what they're doing with the newspapers, what they're doing with the books, is just exploring what can be expressed there. So here, on the level of the elements and the letters, you're completely free. You can draw, you can have the old-fashioned symbols, you can have the icons, you can have the letters, you can combine them in any way, and so on. So of course, on the level of the points, so this always is with the classification, it's a bit complicated. But in comparison to the limitations, the elements and the limitations of the letters of the printing machine, and the lines and the pages, and you get the pages into a book. This is a game, and in comparison to that, the freedom you have here is enormous. Especially, you can change it 50 times a second, and it's connected to any other page. So, and therefore, it's you not any longer can trust in this printed thing. So, here, for example, it's an exploration. and there. It's not like here. So you always have to ask a question and say what you want, and then you get something. For example, in this kind of order of the book, so you get the book in there, but you can have music in there, on the same screen, or. So this is the any, and with the any we have, of course, because we have to this kind of imagination, not intuition, imagination. And it's complicated to find the imagination. So therefore, the trusted things are, we try to get the traditions, for example, the letters and so on, get them into there, and to get some order. Yeah, but we are freeing up, for example, and the feedback, for example, from these kind of displays is this kind of layout, of course. Yeah? Mm-hmm. You wouldn't have done it with the old-fashioned machines because they're too linear. You see, it's the layout is becoming more an image. It's a feedback from this media to the old one. And therefore, it's always flooding. All these are the this is with the lobster. This is the gap, and this is working all the time. This is the sediment for this one, and then this is getting a sediment back and so on. And you find it everywhere, this kind of gap and difference in the, of the substrate and the mediate, for example. And then it's working like this, and then new things are coming out of that. If you only have that, what won't work. If you only have that, there will be no progress. And if you bring that into difference, then it's working for both sides. You have this gap, and then you can find things. If you are only with this and try to do anything without an idea what had been there before, without a sediment or an opposite side of the lobster.
I don't think they read yet. The lobster is the image of the genealogy of morals, of the next text we are going to read.
Okay. I made a mistake. The next text.
But the screen is as much a representation as the book is, right? Well.
Yeah, but on another level.
So yeah, but
this is a sediment for that, and this is a mediation, this is an abstraction from that, this is a mediation from that, and by this kind of difference, he is trying to imitate that, and by this kind of imitation, he is getting, he's mirroring this kind of thing, and therefore you're thinking about this in another way, and this gives feedback here, and so on. You always need this kind of differences, and it's the same here. Therefore, this is too few. So you have an unlimited levels of unlimited levels, and you always have these kind of differences between the different kinds of abstractions, and in the gap between these abstractions, this is working. And then you can be creative, and the new is coming. If you only have one representation or think in one representation, you are in the B, and then you are just exploring. So you have simple rules how to do that, and then you are finished. If you get that into another, in contrast with another abstraction, then it's working and new is coming on. And you will find it, of course, it's if you look, for example, at the grid of the screen, you can compare it, for example, with the with the grid of the letters,
yeah,
and the elements of the letters. So
much, yeah.
Then there's no difference.
Yeah.
Therefore, it's no fun in this, this thinking. Yeah? So you need this kind of imagination coming out of the clear of clear differences and so on. And this has to be, you have to think this in open gaps and make this productive. And then you can. And you can get the steps further.
I mean, you need this kind of imagination if you want to develop further the research in one direction. You could, for example, go and say, well, this computer probably is the best that could ever be, so let's just create a world where everyone has the same computer and the problems we face now will be solved, for example. That would be an every kind of dealing with even with the computers. But if you would say, you want to find the next generation of computers, then it would probably make sense to relate it to the iPhone, maybe, I don't know, or anything else, and start this kind of differential play. And then the difference between the every and the any has a lot to do with how do you deduce your stabilities. It's like when you want to plan something, you have to make assumptions, which you think they are stable, they are secure, you can trust them. And the difference between every and any has to do with where you derive these assumptions from. In the every, you say, okay, we all know that rectangulars, they work really well, or the geometrical elements. So let's deduce everything we need to know in order to be stable from that systematics. And then you can differentiate that and create more effective tools and distribute them most widely. Then you are in an every deduction way. And if you want to explore the borders of the possibilities of that, then you have to start to think differentially. And that means you have to start to compare things which are not the same. And in order to do that, you need to relate them to a third, to the comparison, to a third of which you say, well, I just look, they are both of metal, I don't know. And then you, on that basis, you can start to compare them and to distinguish them differently. And that's where the problem of the classes, the types, and the species come in. But this will be topic of the I will have slides which will make it hopefully clearer. But this is where the question of any and every is really not, it cannot be answered by saying this is an any object or the screen is an any object. You can deal with the screen as if it were an every object, no problem. It depends on the perspective you choose when you want to know what you are dealing with, if you are dealing with the screen. And even you can you can take any you can even take grids, Cartesian grids, and you can deal with Cartesian grids in terms as if it were an any device. And that would probably lead you to assume that you can just create any dimensional spaces. So you can leave behind the three dimensions that are involved in the Cartesian grid, and you can say, well, I just, like Klaus did yesterday, you know, his clue was always to say, well, if we can't solve it, we just look at it as if it has dimensionalities, and we start to assign names to these dimensionalities. That's in a way a treating of the Cartesian grid and the B kind of logics from within a mindset that is interested in the any kind of logics. So don't try to find objects which you can sort in one or the other. It's really a question of attitude, of what you are doing with it.
Any other comment? Of scheme which integrates mathematics, the concepts, and technology applications, and so on, into this. Is it helpful to get
an
idea?
But it's still hard to figure out the third category.
Yeah, of course.
For the artifact function.
So.
Is this kind of steps of thinking is commonly shared in mathematics or any other fields? Is it?
This kind of.
Well, I would say mathematics has been for a long time in the third category, but mathematicians themselves, they are very much focused on developing mathematics, which is the creation of structures. So that's why they are very much in the third category. But whenever you would talk to mathematicians that apply it, then it's mostly B category. Mm-hmm. Mostly. But, I mean, the main the main argument for us to say that there is something like a C category is because the mathematics with which we are dealing is long already not the B category anymore. Since this, what is called the crisis of foundations, which was essentially a crisis of mathematics and of the mathematical basis for science in the 19th century. And since then, mathematics has evolved incredibly diverse and fast, and in ways that is also not being integrated into philosophy and in all the other sciences.
So if you summarize what happened in the last 150 years, when C came up, driven by mathematicians. So, and I think the pure mathematicians are mostly in C, not the applied mathematicians. So, and then in the beginning of the 20th century, there was a huge crisis. And because philosophy, mathematicians, physicists, and so on, they really got an outside view to be driven by mathematicians. And they thought this could not be. So and they get enormous strength in using these things in music, in media, radio, and in technology, in electricity, and so on. And got an enormous strength. And they really got anxious in the beginning of the 20th century. So then the big wars came, and you can think from my perspective today, but I'm not expert in that, the 20th century is just, they really get anxious, and this was a crisis of intuition at the beginning of the 20th century.
Foundation and intuition is our exchange terms.
Crisis, and this is famous, and they really, they realized that we are leaving B, very drastically.
But being is like this basic concept of philosophy that we can describe what is ontology. Being.
And then there had been the catastrophes of the world wars, driven by this disorders somehow, and in principle by the potential that you are able to organize populations, you organize technologies and so on. All these kind of potentials coming up. And this was a big crisis in the 20th century. And and if you have that, the 20th century, the last 100 years, is just on secularization on and popularization of B. So what really took place in B is not a conceptual, in the 20th century, is not a conceptual forthcoming, but it's a factor 10 in population and everything. At minimum. So people are using this kind of the B, everybody is using B in a very large extension. It's a factor of 10 at minimum more in Western Europe in the 20th century. Everybody is educated, everybody is using these kind of machines, everybody has a lot of time to think, to read. They get all access to this kind of technology and so on. So we found an enormous an enormous growth of this kind of technology in the 20th century everywhere. So it has only been, for example, the kind of discussion we are talking about 100 years ago. It has been very few people who had the resources and the abilities, very few points, very few researchers have been on our planet. And it's 10 to 100 times more, 100 times, 100 years later. And much, much more people were able to read.
There were that's Wikipedia, I think. They say it's 1 million researchers, academic people worldwide in the year 1900, and today it's more than 100 million.
100 million.
So you just really have a lot more people thinking, talking, discussing.
In the 20th century, pop culture and everything is just for popularizing what has been invented in the 19th century, not in the concept itself. And this is with computer technology. People are using it like before, but there are hundreds and thousands and times more usages of them in the old-fashioned way. And now we are at the level that we get enough potentiality and enough people are intelligent enough and we who are really start to understand and trust in this new phenomena. So we think now we are on the level for the next conceptual level. This is a shift. We really try to understand what is Hasi. Therefore, in the 20th century, there are very few in thinking in there. It's just the technical performance which came with and the factor 100, 1,000 in availability of these things, the thinking, the researchers, the technology, and so on.
I mean, you do have in philosophy of the 20th century, you have a series of people who were thinking about the limitations of B. You know, you have Wittgenstein and his theory of language. You have Gödel and his limitations for mathematics. You have people like Derrida saying that philosophy cannot be a system anymore. Deleuze, of course, as well. Foucault, who claims that power, we have to find a different relation to power because power is not external to us, but every situation which is social is striated by power relations. We can't. There is no equilibrium in that terms. So we have to come up with a different philosophy of history and of the social. So you have a lot of people spelling out, and first, yes, I mean, Husserl and the entire school of phenomenology. Husserl was a mathematician, and he came to focus on phenomenology for philosophy because he saw, and he really took the crisis of foundations so serious, the relativization of geometry and these new kinds of functional mathematics that had no ontological grounding anymore. And that's why he suggested, okay, let's just not talk about being anymore, but always already that which is framed within certain worldviews, and then let's analyze that. That stands at the very beginning of the 20th century. But what has not yet happened and is actually a way to try to not just criticize and point to the limits, but start to integrate again in a direction that could somehow correspond to the effective technological power which is there. There's a big misbalance in that, and a lot of people are. I mean, if you think, you don't need to know in order to operate all the computer programs. Like all the, you are so angry with the counselors, the PricewaterhouseCooper people, and so, just looking at companies which are hundreds or 200 of years old, and they come here, 25-year-old young persons having no clue about how leadership responsibility, what kinds of necessities that means. They just have templates and schemes deduced from a statistical analysis of 10 or 100 companies in a similar realm, and they just reproduce the recipes and say, now we have to change this here and this here and this here, and it will all help the optimization of the company. And they are destroying structures without knowing really what kind of structures they are dealing with. And that's, I mean, in many cases it's also helpful and it's also good. It's not to say that this is bad, but the situation is that with the computer tools we don't need to know anymore so much with what we are dealing, and we can still do things. You were talking about the architects creating all the houses and not being architects at all in Mexico because the quality was so bad. And you were asking yourself, well, if they don't want architects, so then that's the situation.
An analysis because we had been looking for a company for investors. And the investors wanted to check the founders of the companies and so on. There was very famous American, I don't know the name of it, to get a personal profile. So, and the interesting thing was, I only had to answer 24 questions on internet. Very simple, 24 questions. And then they had the same questions another time in a negative form. So it's 2 times 24 questions. So, and this was a work for 20 minutes to answer them. So, and they have a process. Some value process, no, yes, more yes, no, really no, and so on. So, 24 of these courses. So, about my personal attitude to certain things, so. And then I got a 60-page text of my personal profile. And he read that and say, wow. Was not this bad. Everything was not there. It was really, it was real. So I thought, not bad. Yeah, 60 pages, a really long text. Say, look, I hope it was, blah, blah, blah. I mean, he's in a critical situation, he behaves like that, and if, and so on and so on. And to say, I can't believe that. How do they get that? So, and they get, it's a program, they get 5,000 euros for their profile. That's a good business. So, and so you understand, this is something like here, you have a lot of statistics. Of course, I did it 100,000 times, and they have statistics, and they know what the customers like in text, or which, so, and they have statistics and correlate the answers to the text the customers like. Need some difference with the personal profiles and so on. So that means that the profile is not wrong, but after 2 weeks, 3 weeks, I thought, this is a very important characteristic of mine, but it's not in the profile. So it's not wrong, but it's not true as well. Because it's like a horoscope. So it's a 60-page individualized horoscope. So and very important things are not there because they are not in the statistics, and they're not important for the customers, the beliefs the customers have as questions and so on. So and this is a very critical thing with all these kind, because if it's so detailed in description, I think there should be a lot behind that. But it's always only a simple procedure. And there's no meaning in it, because it's only the simple procedure. And you reproduce it and so on. And you are just in the reading and interpreting it in the wrong way. And therefore it becomes this kind of importance. In this certain situation, if you're looking and try to understand this and so on.
Because
it delegates a responsibility for checking a person to this statistics. And it's very complicated. It's good to understand if somebody with the attitude of an expert explains how this works. It's very simple to say, I follow you. And it's very complicated to get an opponent, an idea, understanding to say, no, I think it's slightly different. This takes a lot of effort, and therefore people just follow this statistical line, and this is the B line. This is the danger of the B.
Because there is meaning in it. Another example is that the SAP organization software. Here, you and Sibylla are always fighting against all the constraints that imposes. Because the basic idea for these kinds of organization systems, when they had been developed, was for companies to save money at the end of the year. But now a university doesn't need to save money. It needs to make the most use in spending the money throughout the year's budget in the most reasonable way. But when all the administrative processes start to be organized according to how companies are drilled in order to save money, you get a lot of bureaucratic anxieties and borders and habits when the people in those positions behave as if they have to safeguard in the same way, you know, because the whole program always suggests what to do from within this frame set of saving money. And you get very difficult situations between administrative functionary compartments.
Iceland money.
Yes, it's, for example, with my yes, for 3 months now. And every time they can't get to a solution with Sibylla, they call me and tell me, and I have the idea that I would just neglect the entire structures and start to act on my own in order to save them, which will make a big mess, of course. So I don't do it. Yeah.
There was also David and Scofidio, they made some project and they used this philosophy of, well, they it's very funny because before you came to the building, I don't know how it's called, I don't remember, but you can you have to fulfill the form, then they give you the code, and it depends how in the building when you are walking you can find a person which got the similar answer like you, and then your code is getting read, but if you go if you are in
the cloud building, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. But when you are between the people who are different than you, the cult is not winning.
There are many, many artistic, really, really nice interpretations of this absurd potentiality, which in a way is amazing, you know, to experience that it works. Like when you were recognizing yourself in that machine product so much.
It is totally valid, I think, because at
totally
the end, valid. Mm-hmm. That's why I think they are growing, and these systematic things to catalog people are okay, because at the end of the day, it's a judgment, and if you judge, I judge someone and I do judge him as well, it will be like the main structure will be the same, but these little details, they should be, but
for me, for example, if now I'm in trouble and I really need this kind of position, for example, this money, there is much of interest now in understanding the algorithms behind that and tuning myself so that the algorithm is just so that I get the money. So I'm not any longer, so this is the problem with it, that for me it's not the as I understood that, and if I really want to get, have to go through these kind of processes, my interest is not in, for example, now getting a good presentation of the company, as a good developing the product, but just adjusting it to this evaluation tool. So I easily can change, and if I say, I want to have this position, answer it like that.
I don't think so. If the machine is smart enough to make this kind of, I don't think you can cheat it. Or maybe not. Maybe you can cheat it now, but I don't know. It will be like more sharp, with the years and the statistics, and it will be more difficult to cheat it.
I think you can cheat.
It's about the proper answering the questions in the way that you think they would. It will give an answer that you want your clients to hear.
An abstraction of that, and so on, but I think this is what we did. So I think I would develop me as a person, and with my profile, I would develop a little criminal energy just to get around like this. And we had a very interesting example where there's a law in Zurich, and you see what our machines are able to do. If you are thinking at sea, you always can cheat me.
Yes.
So there's, for example, a law, and I tell you that, what we did, a very simple thing. There's a law in Zurich that you can't build a building which throws more than 2 hours shadow to the other buildings a day, so something like that. So this is to prevent Zurich from skyscraper buildings, because at that moment it's not working. If you try to construct that, it's not working. You can't make a skyscraper because you always have troubles. So now with this evolutionary algorithms, we just said, what can I build here not to cover more than 2 hours the neighbor buildings? And it's no problem. You can have an unlimited number of skyscrapers everywhere. looking a little curious, but it's no problem. The higher, the better. So the distance to the building gets so the stories, the lower stories are a little complicated, but you can do it as you want, because the distance is bigger and then it's moving. That's not the problem. So, and we really achieved this regulatory without any difficulties, and this took 3 days. And now we offered it several times to the customers. So it was 3,000 Swiss francs, that just a calculator. With the bottom up, not the B means just constructed and look whether there's a shadow. And C means first the shadow and then the building. You see, it's a complete other cosmos of possibilities.
And so the point would not be to say these machine analyses are not valuable, but the point is saying they are an objective and per se a valid representation. That is not enough. But if, for example, they would have invited you after that analysis to comment on that profile of yours, it would be really fun, no? Because they would have the analysis, which is based on all the experience of all the statistical data, and they could get a much better image of your smartness if they can see how you engage with that, for example. So a small change. It's not about saying this kind of power that is possible on the B level is bad, not at all. But and that's why the philosophy is important. We need to find another attitude in dealing with it, and then we can become much.
We can have more. There's nothing but these kind of things, but you have to play around with them. There's no need to trust in them.
Per se,
it's a kind of abundance.
Yeah.
We're talking about. But there's nothing else than these kind of things. Another question? Or comments? What do you want to be explained in the next lecture?
I don't know, maybe somebody could explain the plane of consistency or immanence somehow in more detail.
I would suggest that if I have, well, my plans were actually to first give the lecture, then do this exercise, and then have questions. But I think it's good to start with this exercise and the lecture, and then it will be much clearer what, for example, the plane of consistency or the immanence is. So we should take about 10 minutes. It's 2 pages for each.